Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Anything But Typical podcast. And this is going to be another fun one. I'm going to learn as much as you guys are because Christina Bartolotta, and unfortunately, Titus couldn't make it. But we'll probably bring him into this conversation at some point as well, because these guys are kind of the dynamic duo up in Lake Norman area. You guys have quite a reputation for being doing a lot of great things. So we'll get into more of that. But the heartbeat question is, you and Titus are on a date night. You're going to the Puttery in Southend, going to do a little indoor putting and also enjoy some good food when you're not having to make it. And so somebody sees you waiting in line and they start talking about both of you. Here's the question. So they don't realize that you can overhear everything that you can that they're saying about you. What would you want somebody to say about you?
I would want them to say that we're real, that we represent Christ well, and we're transparent, we're vulnerable, and we show our humanity. So that's I think that's it.
Well, that is really good. And just so you know, Christina, you probably don't know this, but the way that Titus and I actually got connected, and I don't know that I've ever actually met him in person, but we had a very good mutual friend named Steve Kinsler.
Oh, yes. I love Steve. Loved Steve.
I mean, anybody listening to this, you hear the name Steve Kinsler and your heart melts and you get a smile on your face just thinking about that guy, because he was one of the most genuine, others-focused, genuine connectors in the city of Charlotte. Like everybody that was good knew Steve Kinsler. And unfortunately, Titus had made a post on August the 7th, 2020. So we're coming up on it.
Yeah.
And Steve was put on a ventilator, and he was one of the first 60, I think he was number 60, unfortunately, to die from COVID in Charlotte, North Carolina. So that's how we got connected. But your reputation, both of your reputations for just being positive ripple makers wherever you are, it's just, you know, it's pretty far reaching. So I just want to say thank you as we get into unpacking more of your story. I just want to say thank you for making a positive difference in the lives of other people that come in contact with you.
That's kind of you. Thank you.
All right, Christina, I want to start with, can you just share with the listeners a bit about the personal and professional background? I want to be able to paint the picture before things like Rise and Collaborative and stuff like that, so we can jump into that later.
Oh, sure. Titus and I have backgrounds in culinary arts. I've actually got a degree from the Art Institute of Charlotte, but we both have done a significant amount of just business work.
Right.
So business development, growth, that sort of a thing. I've got, well, more than I'd like to admit, more than a decade or so in the automotive industry.
Mm-hmm.
So generally the finance side of things. Obviously I came from sales and went my way up, and Titus has got audiovisual and or audio video and other business entity scenarios. But basically what we have found consistently in what we do is that we're both quite process oriented. And when we come into a business, we help the continued development and growth of that business. But all the while, personal chef opportunities and doing things to help feed people and just keeping and maintaining a passion for cooking.
Yeah, and you having the strength in finance and Titus having the strength in things like video and marketing.
Yeah,
it's
he's great at that.
Yeah, exactly. It works really well. Can you talk a little bit about that dynamic? Because it sounds like and seems from everything that I've done on the research, how much you two can complement each other in business.
Yeah. So, and funny enough, if you look at our kind of personality profiles or any real tests that you can take, all of my strengths are his weaknesses and vice versa. So it plays over in life and business, right? So he's really great at the marketing aspect of it. And I'm really good at, hey, let's cut here, but put there, and because that makes more fiscal responsibility. So, like, it's more fiscally responsible, right? But when it comes to the food, I get a little more creative, and he gets more fiscally responsible. Because I'm like, no, the morel mushrooms. He's like, they're not ready for morels, Christina. So I'm like, okay, there. So we try to maintain good balance of, and it's open communication too, because it creates quite an opportunity, candidly, for us to grow each other.
Yeah, I'm sure. And if both of you were just head in the clouds all the time, nothing would end up working out, right? Every company
No.
adventure you tried to take would end up
Yeah.
bankrupting you.
Yeah, it'd be quite discouraging
Yeah,
over and over.
absolutely. So you talked about the having a decade in the automotive industry and worked your way up there, became general manager for a dealership as well. So what are some of the lessons that you've been able to take from your journey in that industry that you've been able to apply elsewhere?
Every little thing matters. And so what you do well in small things will apply well in large things. So character development is primary. And I think the bigger part is to not be afraid to train a human. So we're going to either train them up or we're going to train them out. And that's just what it is. As long as my culture doesn't change and my standards don't change. So you develop a culture, you maintain that culture, you have standards, and you completely express the vision in ways people can see it and hear it and understand it and tangibly kind of feel like they're going to grasp it. Because as long as they have that vision in front of them, if you've got the right people in the right places, you'll get it.
There's two things that really stood out. I almost interrupted after the first one. I'm glad you did, or I didn't, because you jumped into a second one that I really liked. But the first thing that I want to hear more about is not being afraid to train people. And it's the first time I've heard somebody say, don't be afraid to train people. What do you mean more about that? And how do you figure out the decisions between, hey, we're training them up versus this is the time that it turns into training them out, right? It turns into they're not the right fit.
Right. So it costs, as you know, quite a bit of money to train someone.
Yeah.
And oftentimes what I've seen kind of over and over again is just a hesitation. If we invest that money in this person and they leave, they're just going to go be better for someone else. And I think if we apply the mindset of good, we can all be better together, then we're okay. But when we look at the person and we just look at the individual and not the class, or like, hey, it's not all cooks, right? Not all servers. No, it's this person who's capable of these things, right? And so if I talk to the person and get to know the person and understand how they develop and how they learn and what drives them, like I'll ask them, hey, what motivates you? Because me guessing is illogical, right? So if I find out what motivates them, I find out what moves them and what matters to them, and I take a real interest, then I can learn them better. And if I learn them, I'll know, hey, we're moving forward with this person. Or, okay, this might not be the right role for this person. Now, are they open to something else? So I think it's a matter of assessing the scenario. But our standards are our standards. Like when you come through my kitchen, you're going to get ServSafe certified as long as you're there past 90 days. That's what's going to happen. So, and if you want to learn something, I'll come early, I'll stay late. We'll do what we got to do. I'll teach you the thing because I want you to grow as a human, right? So if you've got an idea, if you want to look into something, that's great. And then right behind that, I'm going to hold you accountable, right? So we're going to do it. We're going to supply you with every opportunity because what I want to remove is every excuse. I don't want to present opportunities for excuses. I want to create an environment in which people can grow. And then they have to take an introspective approach and they go, hey, you know what? That really was me there. And they get an opportunity right there to decide, am I going to stay here? Am I going to move forward? Or am I going to just, this isn't going to be for me and go? And
Yeah.
that's okay either way.
So one of the things Gary and I talk a ton about, and we've just noticed a lot through the cadence of doing these podcasts, is the standards and the culture inside of different companies. So you had made the comment of being able to go back and forth, have that communication, and if it's something that they did, they can own up to it, and you can have that with those conversations. The thing I'm really curious about is how do you create the culture where your people feel comfortable being able to be more transparent or vulnerable to where they can ask for help, they can admit mistakes. That's not the easy type of culture to create.
It's quite difficult. And I think there's a lot of unlearning that has to happen too, because even if they're very new to us or the industry, someone along the way has told them at some point, hey, messing up's not okay in that capacity, or there's some fear behind it. And as I get to know them, we can kind of unravel those fears. But I also show them, and I think Titus does a great job of this too. We show them, hey, we're human too. We're going to make mistakes. And we're going to have an opportunity in every one of those to grow from it. If we don't grow from it, then it wasn't a mistake. It was beyond that, right? Because we're choosing to fail. Yep. So having a moment of failure is completely fine. In fact, I tell my children, where did you fail today? And what did you do? What did you learn from it? Because mm-hmm. it's important to fail forward, right? But if you're afraid of this word, because it's the new F word, right? Then you don't want to do it. And you're going to lie about it, or you're going to blame someone else or a circumstance. And you don't have the intestinal fortitude to look in and say, that was me and I should grow, but I don't know how to. So let me get help. So we make ourselves readily available quite often, frankly, and we're super transparent. I mean, it starts from the top, right? So if we go, hey, we're going to be transparent all along the way with appropriate things, we're not going to be inappropriately transparent, right? Yep. Then you can be transparent too. And if you're not, that's going to come to light and we're going to have a conversation about it and you have to make a decision.
Yeah. And the availability thing is something that a lot of leaders don't do well. And that was your knee jerk reaction earlier of the response of, hey, if somebody needs training, I'm going to stay late. I'm going to be available. And I think that's a testament to you owning this is the role that we're going to play. If this is the culture and the standard we want, then we're a part of this. We're not just going to dictate from the top bottom.
That's right. That doesn't work. Leaders lead from behind, right?
Yeah.
I got to show you the vision and you got to be able to see and feel it. But if you don't know anything about me, that'll never happen. Mm-hmm. You can't trust me and you don't know that I actually know what I'm doing, right? So
yeah, fair.
You can say, hey, oh, well, obviously they have a restaurant, but that doesn't mean they know anything about the industry or how to even cook, right? So we get in there and I mean, it was 10 o'clock the other night and I'm cleaning the hood system because it needs to be done properly, right? And we need, and I'm taking pictures and I'm showing, because it's like, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to show the way. You guys tried, fantastic. And this part was really good, but these parts need to happen too. And we go through that process with them and they see not only are these people capable and able, but they're willing to come right into the trenches with us.
So Christine, I'm really curious, what inspired you to start Rise Cafe? Where did that come from?
Well, we feel it's a God movement, candidly, because neither one of us wanted to actually own a restaurant. We understand the stress behind it, and we understand the margins behind it. And I'm not a huge fan of serving alcohol, so we don't serve alcohol at Rise Cafe. So we understand the margins behind that too, right? Mm-hmm. But we just felt, we saw it populated, it popped up, and we saw it and we said, hey, we used to have our bins there from the Lotta Foundation. It was the Egg Cafe, and it just happened to be posted as available. We're always looking for businesses and opportunities, but never a restaurant. But that restaurant populated, and I sent it over to Titus, and he said, we should probably pray about this. And we did. And we both felt just very led to take it on. We both felt like it would be an opportunity for us to connect with people just at a deeper level and to have them experience the love of God in a different way. And that industry, I don't know if you know, how familiar you are with the culinary world. It can be pretty intense and it can be negative in a lot of ways. So for us to have the opportunity to maybe revamp and turn some of that around is something that we felt like we should just do it. So let's go.
One of the interesting pieces of this for you is the blend or overlap between the personal values and the professional aspirations, right? You say, hey, we're always looking for companies, but then also on the other side, you're saying, hey, this was a call from God. When you made the decision, when you two were talking, you said, okay, we're going to sleep on it. We're going to pray on it. You come to the decision, we're going to do this. How did the conversation go of what it was going to look like? How do you blend those two things of the personal values and the professional aspirations?
So we both just committed to be very God-led, and to make sure that we're on the same page with God about all the major aspects of it, because it can become a pretty huge undertaking, especially when you're taking on something that's already existing and they've already got their culture and their values and their everything in place. So some of the things we committed to do was pray over the restaurant weekly. And so we go, we lay hands and we put oil and we present this opportunity to the team. If they want to join us, they can. But our kids are now involved, so we do that. We have our pastor, we have our prayer warriors, we have our very, very tight-knit close circle of friends with us. So we keep good accountability. We try to maintain as much balance as possible so that we're not so driven by the stress factor of it that we're making poor choices, right? So making sure that we check, pulse check each other. Hey, where are you at on this? Where are you at on that? Before we're moving forward on pretty much anything major.
I want to back up because, and I want to tie into something that you said is like, hey, we're always looking for businesses. So I want to back up a whole lot further to what got you guys into business. Like, take us back from some of the journey of when you guys met and some of the things that you were involved in from a business standpoint. Because, like, husband and wife teams working in the same business, ooh boy, that's pretty stressful. Not everybody can do it. So, walk us back a little bit further, if you would, to that.
How far back do you want to go, friend?
Take it as
Far back
far
as you
back as you
want
want to go.
to go. There's no right or wrong answers here. Wherever you want
goodness.
to take it.
Well, so Titus knew me BC before Christ. When we met, I was at the very end of culinary school. I had been working multiple jobs. I was working two jobs and barely sleeping. And I was living with a partner who was doing some very inappropriate things. And so I decided, hey, instead of living here, I'm just gonna hang out in my car because that's
Wow.
easier. So I had already been homeless. So I knew that lifestyle when I was young. I was homeless for quite a few years. And so I felt comfortable in that capacity that I would be able to complete what I was doing. But shortly before that transpired, I happened to connect with Titus, and he and I became friends pretty quickly, which was strange because I wasn't a people person, right? So for me to people wasn't really my thing. And so we became friends, and he and I were talking, and he found out what was happening, and he was like, "Why don't you just crash on my couch?" And I was like, "Well, that sounds kind, but I'm okay." So he was living with a roommate, and ultimately, I did. I crashed on his couch. We were great friends for a while, and I actually for about a year. I got my own place because I was in the culinary world, and he decided I should go into sales, which is hilarious because I took a test.
The
I
non-people
took
person going into sales.
it right. And I told him, I said, I shouldn't do that. He's like, you would be great at sales. And so and it was H.H. Gregg at the time. I took a test because they have you take this really long test. And at the very end of it, the trainer said, this test says that she should not be in sales. And I said, that is correct. I should not be in sales. So the trainer said, I think he was a corporate trainer for H.H. Gregg. I think the test might be wrong, though, but the test is never wrong. I'm like, I'm sure your test is accurate. I'm going to stay in the kitchen. Thanks. Right. So I turned down the job, and then I got this real pull in my spirit, and I knew it was the wrong decision. So I went back and accepted the job. They took me, and it turns out I was great at sales. It was phenomenal. And so he and I, worked in H.H. Gregg with different locations, and I beat his numbers. You can ask anybody. Not that there's a competition, but if there were, I'd be winning. But so we became great friends. We were dating, and then became engaged, and obviously got married. But in between all of that, we realized we had a lot of the same core values, and I came to Christ and recognized that, hey, the lifestyle that I was in was one of rebellion because I felt great rejection from God. And so, God was gracious and patient, and he's just wonderful. And he just spends his time with each of us, and he goes, hey, you're my kid, so we're gonna get through this sort of a thing. He did that with me over the course of decades, and it's just, I'm grateful for it. So as we were growing and going, I recognized that Titus was quite the entrepreneur. He didn't love necessarily authority, but he respected it, and so he would submit to it. But he always had phenomenal ideas. And then, when he would say, hey, why aren't they doing it this way? I would go, oh, that makes logical sense. And when someone would shift, if he could get them to shift and do it that way, they would see exponential growth, right? So we recognize this pattern, and he's like, hey, you realize you do that too? I'm like, no, I just saw it in you. So it's funny how we see the thing in the other person, right? And so we can develop it. And so it's one of those scenarios in which we go, hey, like, let's try this other field. Because H.H. Gregg was, it wasn't for me for long. So I was there for a few years, and I excelled in sales. And then I became, an assistant regional manager. But at that point, my direct head was just inappropriate on a lot of levels. And I decided it was time for me to move on. And so I was like, hey, I'm just going to go back to the kitchen and I'll just go cook. He's like, actually, I think you should go into car sales. I'm like, I don't want to go into car sales. I did the sales thing. That was fine. I'm going to go cook. He's like, you're great at cooking. You can do that on the side. Would you just consider the car thing? Just give it 90 days. You can always go back to a kitchen. Okay, fine. We'll give it 90 days. Yeah, so apparently I was really good at that too, right? So God blessed the work of my hand in each of those spaces. And all along the way, Titus is maintaining his position in the AV world and doing AV sales, but also helping owners and helping people who were higher up. Just people were just starting to ask him questions. He collaborated with the general manager of the dealership I was working with, just naturally. People just come to him. And he just has these ideas, and he has these communication preferences that he teaches people, hey, if you can communicate this way, you'll actually connect. And that's where you're going to get it, right? When you can make the connection with the person. So as that was happening, he was getting more frustrated with H.H. Gregg, and he decided to leave and went to Jiffy Lube of all places. You haven't met Titus in person, but if you've seen him, he just doesn't look like the guy who's going to work on the car. You know what I mean? God bless him. He gets manicures from time to time. It's fantastic. And good on him. I'm a fan of the hygiene, so I love it. But so he took this on, and everyone's questioning him. Everyone. They're like, what's going on? And he's like, I don't know. This is just what I feel like I should do. And so I'm like, well, let's do it. And he became district manager in a matter of weeks, I believe. It was a very short period of time. But he refused to move forward before experiencing every position because he understood the importance of being able to do the role, right? So as he's moving up there, I'm moving up in the automotive industry. And we're just both kind of moving forward, but understanding that what we're doing just doesn't feel permanent. So at any rate, so we're moving forward, but we're knowing that, hey, this is the path we're on for right now. And in every one of these interactions, we have an opportunity to either bring people closer to God or pull them further from God, right? So this is front of mind. And as we continue on, there's just this an underlying frustration, if that makes sense. This lack of comfort. There's this lack of like, hey, we're just not in the right role necessarily. And it progresses and progresses. He then decides to go to an audio video company. It's called KS Audio Video, and he helped them turn around. They were doing fine at that point, but he helped them go from, I think it was like a half a million to 5 million. I mean, he helped them just put some processes in place, get some procedures down, and do all sorts of things. And I don't have the firm numbers, so we'll have to get that from him. But
Sure.
I know that he helped develop that company in a pretty huge way. And all the while, when I'm off, I'm cooking or taking a catering something or a personal chef something, because I refuse to let go of the industry. It gets in your blood, eh? And so we're moving forward, and I'm still in the automotive industry, but I'm now in a position where we have kids and I don't like the hours necessarily, if that makes sense. I was leaving before they woke up. I was coming home after they went to sleep, and it just wasn't the way that I felt parenthood should work, if that makes any sense. So we had a conversation about it, and I decided, hey, we need to make some changes. And I'm not sure what those are going to look like, but I know that these hours are not going to be what they are, right? But right before that happened, he asked if I would be okay if he jumped into just his own role. After helping grow KS Audio Video, he decided to try the automotive industry at my request for about a year. And he did really well there. He did it on the commercial side, and I was retail. I've always been retail. And the commercial side's a little bit different. You can build a pipeline and you have great hours. So I was a little jealous, candidly. I said, how'd you figure out how to do that? That's great. And so he's like, I think I should start my own business. I'm like, okay, well, what do you want it to be? Like, what's the business going to be? And I believe Collaborative Solutions Group was the first one that he started, because he wanted to use what people were reaching out to him for, developing people, developing businesses, helping with processes. He's also a phenomenal speaker. The man was preaching at 12 years old. So he's a public speaker like to no end. I haven't seen anyone engage a crowd as well as that wasn't completely famous. It's a
Wow.
gifting, I think. Yeah. So he's phenomenal at that. And so when he wanted to start the business, I'm like, go for it. You got me for about 5 more years, though. So that's about 5 more years. I can't do more than 5 more years in this capacity. And so he said, yeah, no problem. And so he went for it. And then right after, I would say within months, he decided he wanted to start a networking company. So business leaders, it was called Unleashed, I think, at first, and then turned into United. So it's Blue. It's still around, but
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the networking company. So he started that, and he got a gentleman named Bob Gores to start it with him. And they collaborated and kind of grew it to multiple chapters, Kansas City, like all kinds of places. So that went well. Yeah. And so then we had the Lotta Foundation, because we wanted to just help people, but we wanted to help people in bigger ways than just us two could help people, if that makes sense, because we'd already been contributing and helping. But instead of worrying about where's the money going, we knew where it was going because we were the ones putting it out, if that made sense. So we did that. And then I decided, hey, I'm going to be done for a bit. And so I left where I was and then found the place that I'm at now, which is Carolina Auto Warehouse. They're open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., which is unheard of in the automotive industry. Closed on Sundays and then another day off in the week. So the structure of that business is pretty phenomenal in that no one's commissioned, everyone is salaried and taken care of. So the
Wow.
culture matters there. Yeah. So because I wanted to get out of that, because I had just been in the positions and it didn't matter which position I went to. It seemed like the greed just didn't stop. Does that make sense? So, and it's not that way for every automotive dealer, but for certainly the bulk of them, because it's a high stress scenario, and you've got to meet the manufacturer demands, and you've got to overcome a lot of obstacles. So that was great for a long time because I enjoyed thinking through things. But as my priorities changed and as my desires changed, it became less of a fun thing, if that makes sense. Any kind of sense. I shifted to, I don't need to solve these problems anymore. They're already solvable, and you guys are choosing not to implement the solution. So I need to do something different with my life because we're now just wasting time, right? And we don't want to do that because I have to account for my idle words. So we want to make sure we're moving forward. And so as we were, you know, as I'm in that and his clients are continuing, in fact, that's why he can't be here today. I think his client just opened store 13 or 14 in under 2 years. So it's one of those scenarios where he's like helping to make sure they've got the right people in the right places. So otherwise he'd certainly be here. But the thing is, while we were doing this, it was like, okay, well, that's good, but there's something different we're going to have to do. So I didn't think it'd be a restaurant, but apparently that's what it was.
Wow. I mean, from homeless, sleeping in your car, crashing on his couch, becoming friends, getting married. Hey, you have a knack for sales. No way. I am not in sales. Like, what an amazing journey. I mean,
yeah.
Like, I love the fact that you guys are so kind of in tune with what makes you tick, what's important, solving issues, being willing to go way outside of your comfort zone. There takes a tremendous amount of humility to do that. So I think that's really amazing. So this is just kind of off the beaten path, but I don't know that we've had anybody that's been homeless before on the show. And so I'd be curious as to what are you, you know, whatever you're willing to talk about, but like, what was the impetus? Why did you choose that? And then what made you snap and go, okay, no, kind of enough of that?
So I had already been homeless. The first time I was homeless, it wasn't necessarily of my choice, and it's going to get really dark really quick. Okay. My childhood was filled with you could check the box for every type of abuse. There's something called an ACEs test, A-C-E-S, and anyone in the psychological world will know this. I scored whatever the top number is, 9, 10, whatever that is. So I've been through all the trauma. I've been through all the things. And when I was 11, my brother's friend sexually assaulted me, and my mother called me a whore and kicked me out. So I left. And I left because all the things that happened prior to that, there was a tremendous amount of abuse in my childhood. Here you go. Here's too much information. I don't care. I'm an open book. So when I was two, my brother and I had to go live with my aunt and uncle because my mom tried to kill me. I don't recall it. I'm told this. Okay.
Wow.
So I'm told she tried to kill me, and unsuccessfully, by the way. So there's that. But
she did succeed.
Made it.
Thank goodness. You are an overcomer, Kristen.
God's had his hand on me all the way through. So that happened. And then my brother and I lived with my aunt and uncle. But my aunt was really super ultra hyper racist. And my brother and I weren't white enough. So she used to beat us and torture us in pretty vile ways. And blamed it on our race, which is absurd. But, you know, no one can choose how they're born, right? Your skin is your skin.
Right.
That is what it is. And God's got a purpose for every person he's put here, and every way he's put them here. But for a very long time, I did not like Caucasian people. I was adamantly against them. And God worked that out through me because there was so much violence and so much just pain behind it. And so when I was seven, I moved back in with my mom. She had a boyfriend and what looked like stability, but she was still very unstable. She introduced me to cigarettes that year. That was actually the first praise I've ever gotten from her. And so I became a smoker, obviously, right? Because that's the first time your mom says good job, because you inhale without coughing. You might imagine I had asthma. So I developed asthma at a pretty young age. And by the age of 11, I had 5 bleeding ulcers, Crohn's disease, ileitis, and colitis. They wanted to remove my colon. But I was adamantly against it. And that year was also the year that my mom introduced me to alcohol and weed. So she was a woman who just didn't know how to cope with pain. She had a really tough go of life and made some really poor choices about it. So she did what she could do with what she had, but I think her capacity was just too low, and her lack of development really impacted the way that my brother and I grew up. So I left because I felt that it was just the best option. Because when she kicked me out, I was like, okay, that's what I'm gonna do. So I left, and it was kind of chaotic. But there were some times that, I would crash at some friends' houses or, have extended sleepovers. But there were also times where I would break into cars to sleep in them, frankly. So when I was 17, it was like 16 or 17, all those years kind of run together. But there was a lot of back and forth stuff, a lot of abuse, as you might imagine, living on the streets. But and a lot of, I would say, jaded perspective, because everyone's kind of an enemy until proven otherwise. Because you might imagine, I was 11, but I was also a girl. So an 11-year-old young girl on the streets is it's pretty dangerous. So you have to kind of lean in one way or the other. And I just really leaned in towards aggressive. That was like where I was comfortable. So that's what I did. And when I was, I think, 16 or 17, my sixth grade chorus teacher let me live with her, which was funny, because when I first, got kicked out or whatever, I would walk to just get to her classroom, and I would go to school just to be, because I could make it just in time. And her classroom, her name was Sherry Blevins, and she would have the kids line up and give them all hugs, and that's when I got a hug, no other time. So I was like, I'm gonna go and feel love somewhere, right? Because I think that's what kids need. They need direction, they need love, they need stability. And so she became my stable person over the years, even when we weren't in contact. But we would randomly, we I would randomly call her periodically just to touch base. And then one time she said, hey, when are we gonna stop this? And I'm like, oh, what are we doing? She's like, pretending. I know you don't live with your mom. And I was like, oh. So my mom and I had an agreement. She would keep health care if I didn't tell anyone. She'd kick me out. Like, that was the deal. And it was important to me that, because I had the bleeding ulcers, right? So I had to periodically go. I had five colonoscopies by the age of 16. And so, and when I was 16, actually, here's a God story. Well, it's kind of all a God story, but when I was 16, I went in, and the Richard Sigmund Jr., I'll never forget this doctor, because he was adamant. He's like, if it's still there this time, we're gonna take your colon out. I was like, cool, we're not doing that, but okay. So we went through. I walked in, and some random man like stopped in front of me. He was wearing all white linen suit, and he goes, it's gone. I'm like, what are you talking about? I thought he maybe escaped, from the mental part of the hospital. And I'm like, guy, go away. He's like, no, if you believe, it's gone. I was like, okay. And I just, skirted around him and left. But we did the colonoscopy. I woke up, and the doctor looked at me, and he said, it's gone. I've never seen this. It's completely gone, as though it weren't there. And I said, okay. And off I went. I didn't recognize at the time that that was God. Right. And I didn't recognize that healing and that grace, but there it was. So anyway, I live with Sherry and Ruth, and they help me establish appropriate communication. And you could basically have called me a feral child at this point, because I was not being raised by humans. So it's one of those things where, I couldn't go to a Rodin exhibit. Because when I went into a crowd of people, I completely shut down. It was just too much liability. All I could see was liability, right? And so they convinced the people at the exhibit to let us in after it closed, so I could still see the art, right? So like little huge things like this really shifted my perspective when it came to humanity. I knew, okay, there are some people in the world, they could be good. It's okay, right? So they helped me kind of get a baseline. They helped me get a high school diploma through the CPCC, their that program, and then they helped me get into college.
Yeah.
So they
Wow.
helped with all that. Yeah, so it's phenomenal. But so I chose to be homeless later because I already knew what it was like at its worst part. And at this point, I was older. I had a car. I had two jobs. You know, I was going to school. I had what felt like more stability. So sleeping in my own car didn't feel like walking for 4 days without food, right? So it was
Wow.
just an option. And then after kind of talking with Titus, it became clear that his offer wasn't a way to get me into a vulnerable space, if that makes any
Yes,
sense.
yes.
So it wasn't like, hey, I'll offer you this, but you owe me that, which is kind of how everything worked on the streets, right? So
Right.
when I realized it was an actual just some one human trying to help another human, I recognized that it would probably be a poor choice if I chose to stay sleeping in the car.
Wow. That is one of the most phenomenal stories. And we've had some amazing stories, haven't we?
Right.
Like, man. I mean, I can't imagine what you went through. Was that in Charlotte, North Carolina, or
It
was it?
was. I'm passionate. There was a lady when I was about 15, 14 or 15. I was so frustrated with the system because there was a lady who wanted to adopt me. And she even went so far as to get a social worker involved. She was an employer because I would get like under the table gigs and such. And she couldn't adopt me. And the DSS worker came out and said, "You've just slipped through the cracks." And I said, "Well, that's not an appropriate answer." So I started making phone calls, and from a payphone, mind you. And this, in retrospect, this very much so looks unstable. But I was calling the mayor and didn't get a response. I called all the way up to the White House, frankly, and couldn't get the president on the phone, but tried. So I'm on a list somewhere.
I love your
I just want to fix
moxie.
it. Yeah.
I mean, you got to have a little bit of that to start a business.
Yeah.
You do. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. And man,
That's
you
true.
are anything but a wallflower, man.
One more comfortable in the background. Better there.
Christina, first, thank you for being as transparent and vulnerable as you've been with sharing the story. There are people out there listening to this right now where things are resonating. Obviously not to the exact same story that you've had, but things are resonating with what you're talking about right now. What are some of the things that you've learned through this journey and all the hurdles you faced that you want to be able to pass on to some of the people listening where things are resonating with them?
Well, I've learned that the deepest points of rejection are often protection. The things that we often feel we want or need or have to have most that we're thinking God's withholding from us for some reason or another are more often than I can count. They have all been points of protection. So, faith.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is so intriguing about what you're doing today also is the amount of impact that you're having, right? You mentioned the foundation that you started and ran. You and I were talking before we turned this on of some of the other impact you're doing. Can you share with the listeners what some of those things are, how you're impacting the community, and why is that so important to the pulse of what you're doing?
Yeah. So some of the things we do, like one of the things that we're committed to, as we want to feed 100 homeless people a week, just period. If we can do more, fantastic, but we want the minimum to be 100. And we want to connect and collaborate with folks who just need some love, man. And, you know, It doesn't have to be physical contact, although we're open for hugs, but just anything that we can do to make someone's day just a little bit easier, right? We have collaborated with Hope House and Ada Jenkins and multiple other foundations already through this restaurant. But I think one of the bigger things that we're doing is anyone who comes to work with us connects to us in a different way, and their spiritual development and personal growth are they become our priority. So we want everyone who comes to or even near Rise Cafe to feel the love of God and to know that it doesn't matter who you are, how you are, what you think of yourself. This doesn't change who God made you to be and how God made you. And it certainly doesn't change your value or your worth. So for us, it's really important for people to see that they matter. And it doesn't matter what it looked like, what it looks like right now, or how other people may even see you. Like, your value is not caught up in how other people see you. Your value is in who you are in Christ, like how God has made you. And so you're loved beyond measure. And we just want to be an extension of God's love, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. What are some of your and Titus's visions for the evolution of this? The vision for how else do you want to be impacting people? What else do you want to be doing to making sure that you're living out that purpose?
We want to do all the things, Brandon. So for us, stay rooted and grounded in Christ and just hearing what he has to say. If you want to hear my biggest vision, my biggest vision is to have land, and these land have like tiny homes on them, and these tiny homes are like these communities of development for people who want to figure out how to function in society, but just don't know how to, or who have been through abuse and need some trauma counseling, sections and pockets. And it's a 2-year sort of a process of growth and development that creates an opportunity for someone to be a functioning member of society. That's my big, big vision, right? But my for right now vision is to look and see where number two is gonna go, where God wants that to be, so that we can expand further in the community and dig deeper and see who we can help and how we can help them. Obviously, battered women's shelter, big deal. Anything that has anything to do with addiction is a big deal. But it can really just be a human having a rough day, man. Like, it doesn't have to be a huge major crisis. We want to impact as many people as possible. When we had the Lotta Foundation, the reason we had the slogan, do a lot of good, is because there's no limit to what that is, right? What's a lot of good? What's that look like? Right? So
I love it.
that's the goal here too. There's not like, okay, well, we check that box off, we're good. We don't do anymore, right? We don't want to stop. We want to just keep going and growing and developing people and ourselves, frankly.
Man. So we're going to have to connect you with another guest that has been on the podcast, a guy named Philip Lanier. And when I started coaching him 5 years ago, he had just turned down a bunch of money for his company. And I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And he didn't know. And he said, "Well, one thing I'd really like to do is do a tiny house community."
Yes.
And I said, "Wow, okay, that's cool, but that's not going to make you any money." And the amount of money that and he was so young, like. It was millions of dollars, but it wasn't going to last him all that long. Like, you got to do what else, you know? And at that point, we realized he was just so burned out on his company that he needed the right people and right seats around him and to get fired up again. And then they, quadrupled the business again, which was
That's
really
good.
amazing. But he would be all about meeting you. And so we'll make sure that that happens along the
Nice.
way. I think that
Yeah,
would be
let's do
really
it.
cool. But I love the fact that, you're starting one person at a time. You can start one person at a time, just like your teacher had such a massive impact on you.
That's right.
I mean, think about that. Anybody listening to this, like, well, oh, I haven't built this or that. I haven't built a big foundation. I haven't done this or that. Start with a hug. Start with,
That's it.
appropriate, right?
Yes,
Start with
please.
showing someone that they matter. That's it. Start with that and then let the dreams expand. But if we lose sight of that, we've really lost a lot, I think.
That's right.
So we obviously are going to have to do a part two with both of you, and we can talk a lot more about the business side, but it was well worth us deviating, because the story that you shared, the lessons, the things you've endured are quite honestly unbelievable, right? And I cannot express how much I appreciate you coming on and sharing all that with us. So before we sign off, where can people come to either connect or reach out to you? Where can people find the businesses? Where can we send people for you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So they can connect with us at obviously collaborativesolutionsgroup.com if they want coaching, consulting, or they need a speaker. But if you're interested in some food, Rise Cafe. So www.risecafelkn.com. And on each of those sites are our contact information. So we're pretty readily available.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Christina. This has been amazing.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
Thank you, Christina.
Sure thing. Bye.